I'm going to give you a story of the biofuel madness in sort of, you know, in a very short manner.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith, and we're going to investigate a wildly underreported climate disaster. A small country became the largest single source of greenhouse gases in the world, bar none. Indonesia's tropical forests were burned down to provide supposedly green alternative energy. Dr. Ted Padzek, spelled P-A-D-Z-E-K, is a professor of geoengineering at UC Berkeley, an expert on unconventional oil supplies, previously employed by Shell Oil. Padzek has analyzed world energy supplies. He also knows a lot about chemical reactors, the devices that convert plant matter to fuels and other useful chemicals. We'll hear some clips from his presentation at Confronting the Triple Crisis Conference, held September 14th to 16th in Washington, D.C. The audio comes via the Progressive Underground hit program Unwelcome Guest, hosted by Lynn Gary. You can get Padzek's full speech, plus two more from the conference, as free MP3 downloads at our website, ecoshock.org. Choose alternative energy from the audio on demand menu.
Why are we doing biofuels? And actually, I should call them agrofuels. Well, there are three stated reasons to do so. The first reason, especially relevant for the United States, is energy security. The second reason is abatement of greenhouse gas emissions. And of course, there's a third reason, which is mentioned very often in Europe, and that is sustainable transportation. Of course, the industrial agrofuels fulfill none of these goals. They provide a false sense of security, of energy security. The greenhouse gas emissions associated with major agrofuel systems may be a factor of 10 higher than burning petroleum outright. And then finally, all major agrofuel systems are unsustainable directly, but they also cause large indirect damage in other places. So, for example, U.S. corn displaces U.S. soybeans into the Amazon forest. So while U.S. corn is polluting the drainage basin of the Mississippi River here, it is also causing indirect damage to the tropical forest in Brazil.
Dr. Padzek relates a climate disaster in 1997 and 98 that is still unknown to most of us here in the developed world.
In particular, in Indonesia, there is a pretty bad aspect of burning the forest to open land for agrofuel plantations, and that's peat. There are thick layers of underlying peat in the forest, which store perhaps 10 times more carbon than the forest itself. Once you start burning peat, you will release gigantic amounts of CO2 and other greenhouse gases. So, in fact, if you step even further out from the surface of the planet and you use, let's say, the polar orbiting satellite, you might witness a completely catastrophic event, an El Nino event in the fall of 1997-98, when roughly a tenth of all forest in Indonesia was burned by logging / oil palm plantation companies to open land for the plantations. This event had a truly global reach and catastrophic consequences, not only for Indonesia, but for the rest of us.
Can a burning Asian forest erupt in a carbon storm strong enough to trigger the famous warm currents and hot storms of El Nino? This is a claim I have not heard before. I did know that Indonesia, with a relatively small land mass, suddenly became the third largest carbon-emitting country in the world, behind only the United States and China. Now Tad Padzek computes that carbon from the peat forests topped the pollution from the biggest industrialized countries. Obviously, we have focused too much on SUVs while letting the cause of tropical forests slip below the radar of activism.
If you look at the amount of CO2 that was measured to be released in the region in the outset here, the Southeast Asia region, there were many stations that are measuring CO2 concentrations in the air. And if you plot this CO2 concentration versus time, and you integrate, you take the area underneath the spike here, the amount of CO2 released from that single El Niño event was larger than the United States releases in 1 year. And the United States is the largest polluter of the atmosphere on the planet. So when people tell you about the clean palm oil biodiesel, think twice.
Beyond the disaster of palm oil, which displaces the great carbon sinks in Asian forests and elsewhere, we are always told of the holy grail of biofuels, cellulosic energy. Basically, that means being able to get oil substitutes from almost any plant matter using chemical reactors. The process could use forest industry waste, agricultural waste, or just ground-up greenery from nature. It all becomes grist for the big energy gulp.
Now, there are some facts about ecosystem productivity. First of all, plants or autotrophs use up about half of what they produce to live. Then animals, fungi, and bacteria eat up to 95% of the remainder. So on average, there is zero left. Of course, in our agricultural systems, we take out a lot of mass from the system every year, so we have to replenish them and subsidize them with ancient plant matter as fossil fuels and minerals.
Is cellulosic energy the green answer, or another unnatural disaster in the making? First of all, almost all of the cellulosic plants are just that. So far, with the exception of one plant in Canada, Padzik tells us, cellulosic technology is imaginary. The Canadian plant managed to get 20% efficiency, that is, 5 parts energy input yields 1 part out. The average efficiency of the best corn refineries is 37%. The industry claims much higher by including the value of a distilled byproduct, but the aim here is energy, and 37% is the best they can do. Even converting coal to liquid fuels gets only 42%, Padzek says. By contrast, an average U.S. oil refinery gets 88% efficiency. Almost all of the energy input becomes a useful product. Dr. Padzik emphasizes that no so-called biofuel source can come anywhere close to the end-use energy production of oil itself. That, in my opinion, has serious warnings. For our future, no technology for replacing oil and gas, on the scale now used for transportation and heating and fertilizers and chemicals, none of that exists. Trying to plug that gap as peak oil develops with biofuels becomes a nightmare of impossible proportions. In fact, that nightmare has arrived. Each of us is already consuming much more energy than all the plant life of Earth can provide. Here's Professor Padzik.
The next stage now is to go to the so-called cellulosic ethanol, that is to utilize entire plants and convert them into liquid fuels, let's say using fermentation, decomposition and fermentation of cellulose. You will see that the eastern part of the United States, most of India, China, Middle East, some of Indonesia, in fact are using up between 50 to 200% of what the plants can produce. Now, obviously, Sahara isn't producing much, neither is the interior of Australia. So the only other places where we can go and grab some of the productivity of which we haven't grabbed is the Amazon, is the equatorial Africa, and some of the Southeast Asia, because as you will see, the rest of it actually uses up already a lot of its existing net primary productivity. So the bottom line is this, that Mother Earth does not have anything to spare to us. And all the stock that we can take mass forever is just that, talk. I will give you a very quick rundown on the numbers of how much energy can be produced by plants in the United States. I will use a somewhat different unit, 1 exajoule, which is essentially the amount of energy in food, which when digested will feed 300 million Americans for 1 year and feed us rather well. Okay? And so that's my fundamental unit. Currently, the United States, as David alluded to, uses about 105 times more energy than we need to live. We should cut it down to by a factor of 2 to align us with Western Europe, and then by another factor of 2, while the Europeans are doing their best, to align us with the capabilities of the planet Earth. By the way, if we were to eat this amount of energy, each one of us would be a 40-45-ton, 7-story high bull sperm whale. So look at yourselves and imagine yourself to being this huge giant trampling the Earth, and that's who we are.
Using NASA satellite mapping and sophisticated calculations of the plant mass growing in the United States, for example, all the farms, the forests, and the wildlands, it would take 64% of that total, ground up and fermented at 32% efficiency, just to provide a third of the fuels used now in America. We could bulldoze every living thing and still run out of fuel. The message from Berkeley Professor Tadzik is stark and simple. If your future is running on plant-based ethanol, you are dreaming of catastrophic failure. Get the full talk in the energy section at ecoshock.org. Next on Radio EcoShock, Cornell's Dr. David Pimentel will explain the cruel idiocy of burning corn for car fuel. This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex. We're going on an audio trip to the big green detour to the false promises of biofuels. But right now, Dr. David Pimentel quickly laments the $5 billion fuel fiasco in America. Courtesy of Alternative Radio, unwelcome guest.
You're listening to a panel on false solutions to the problem of energy from Confronting the Triple Crisis, a conference held last September in Washington, D.C.
Our first speaker that we're going to have will be Dr. David Pimentel. And Dr. Pimentel is from Cornell University. He's a professor of ecology and agricultural sciences. He's published more than 600 scientific papers and 24 books. He served on many national and government committees, including National Academy of Sciences, President's Science Advisory Council, U.S. Department of Energy, and many more. So please welcome Dr. David Pimentel.
Thank you very much for that kind introduction, and I'm extremely pleased to be here. I put this first slide on, showing all of these people, because this is what our major problem is, in fact, that we have too many people for the energy resources, for the food resources, land, water, and so forth, to provide everyone with their needs. The total number of people on Earth today, which is more than 6.5 billion, and we add a quarter of a million, and I emphasize that, we add a quarter of a million additional people every 24 hours. And the World Health Organization reports that we already have 3.7 billion people who are malnourished on Earth. This is nearly 60% of the world's population are malnourished on Earth. And it does relate to this whole question of biofuels. Now, we in the U.S. are blessed with an abundance of a variety of foods, and we eat, in fact, too much. The average American consumes 2,200 pounds of food per person per year, or close to 1,000 kilograms per person per year. And that is, in fact, one of our major problems. Now, relative to this collection of solar energy for biofuels, ethanol in particular, our green plants collect only 0.1% of the solar energy reaching the plants during the year. And to put that into perspective, photovoltaics, for example, collects approximately 20%, or in fact, photovoltaics collects 200 times the solar energy that our green plants, and I'm not being critical of green plants, they've been around for billions of years. Now, also to put into perspective this issue, back in 1850, we were primarily dependent on wood as our primary fuel. We are burning or using twice as much fossil energy per year in the U.S. than the green plants collect annually in the U.S. And again, that's all of agriculture, forestry, and so forth. And we can't continue to do that. Now, first of all, of course, to produce corn ethanol, you have to grow the corn. And it takes 14 different energy inputs to produce an acre of corn. And roughly, it takes about 100 gallons of oil equivalents to produce an acre of corn. It's really quite energy intensive. It takes approximately 22 pounds of corn to produce 1 gallon of ethanol. That 22 pounds of corn, of course, is food that we are putting in our gas tanks and so forth, and that has the implications that I mentioned early. To produce 1 gallon of ethanol that's taken this 22 pounds of corn requires about 28,000 kilocalories. 28,000 kilocalories is approximately 1 gallon of gasoline. So it's taking 1 gallon of gasoline to produce 1 gallon of ethanol. Now, when you're through the fermentation, that is, taking the corn, ground it, and put the yeast in to ferment this corn, and after you've distilled the ethanol out of the water, and incidentally you have 10% ethanol and 90% water, and it takes a lot of energy to get that ethanol out of the water and concentrate it. You can't burn 95% ethanol if you're going to mix it with gasoline. You have to further energy inputs to concentrate that ethanol into 99.5% so that you can mix it with gasoline, and that takes more energy. Now, then I looked at the energetics of this, and I told you earlier that for every gallon of ethanol that you produce requires 28,000 kilocalories. The 28,000 kilocalories, as I mentioned earlier, is about the energy in 1 gallon of gasoline. A gallon of ethanol has 19,400 kilocalories present in it. So, in fact, it's taken 40% more energy to produce that gallon of ethanol than we actually are getting out. Or another way to look at it, it takes 1.5 gallons of gasoline to produce 1 gallon of ethanol. You will see, in fact, many publications that are talking about positive return we get when we do produce ethanol. And the way that these pro-ethanol people are able to achieve a positive return is that they omit the farm labor, they omit farm machinery, they omit irrigation, they omit the energy required to produce the hybrid corn and various other, and they omit the environmental impacts that I'll tell you about in a moment, and then take excess credit after you get through converting the corn into ethanol. You have a byproduct left called distiller's grain that you can feed to cattle. But distiller's grain is not energy in the terms that you can put it into your gas tank. And so, but they're taking credit for all of this so that they can make ethanol look like a winner.
This is Radio EcoShock right here on Green 960 AM Radio San Francisco. We're listening to Dr. David Pimentel from Cornell University discussing biofuels.
But the environmental impacts are enormous. It takes approximately 1,700 gallons of water to produce 1 gallon of ethanol. Most of that is in the growing of the corn. Now, corn production causes more soil erosion than any other crop grown in the nation. It uses more nitrogen fertilizer than any other crop grown in the nation. And in fact, the nitrogen that is leaking from our corn production is going down the Mississippi into the Gulf of Mexico, and it's the prime cause of the dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico that's the size of New Jersey. Then corn production uses more insecticides than any other crop, more herbicides than any other crop grown, and then in the production of ethanol, It releases enormous quantities of carbon dioxide, contributing to the global warming problem. First of all, I told you that it takes 1.4 gallons of gasoline equivalents to produce a gallon of ethanol, and so you've added more carbon dioxide there. But number two, in the fermentation process, that is, when the yeasts are fermenting the corn to produce ethanol, they release enormous quantities of carbon dioxide. And then when ethanol is burned in the car, ozone and various other pollutants are released into the atmosphere and cause human problems as well as other environmental problems. And then for every gallon of ethanol that is produced, there are 12 gallons of sewage effluent that have to go into the sewage system. And this is a major environmental cost. Now, in the U.S. today, and I'm using DOE or Department of Energy numbers, last year we produced 5 billion gallons of ethanol, which certainly sounds like a lot of fuel. However, and it took 20% of U.S. corn to make this ethanol. And then you ask the question, what does 5 billion gallons of ethanol mean to total petroleum use in the United States? It's 1%. Is that making us oil independent? 1%. If we use 100% of U.S. corn to produce ethanol, it would provide us with 7% of our total petroleum use. In fact, if we used all the ethanol produced in Brazil, you'll hear about it in a moment, and all the ethanol produced in the United States, it would provide us with 2% of our total petroleum use. It's not saving us. When we're converting corn into ethanol, we're taking corn away from livestock production, beef, pork, chickens, eggs, and so forth. And this is increasing the cost of food to you as well as the people in the world who depend on grains as their food. And the reason for ethanol production from corn in the United States, and actually in Brazil too, is subsidies. The government is subsidizing the production of corn ethanol. And it's costing $6 billion of your money, tax money, to produce this ethanol. And then you're paying an extra money, as I told you, for higher prices of meat, milk, and eggs. The subsidies for a gallon of ethanol are 90 times, and I want to emphasize that, are 90 times the subsidies per gallon of gasoline. I'm not for any subsidies, gasoline or ethanol. Anyway, it's higher meat, milk, and egg prices for us, but it's also affecting the poor people of the world.
David Pimentel, you've been listening to a panel on false solutions. From Confronting the Triple Crisis. You can download an MP3 of this and previous episodes of the show at unwelcomeguests.org.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
And that's it for Radio EcoShock this week. Find our website at ecoshock.org. Alex has left the building.
It's green, see? A green fix should last a long time.